Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium. And everywhere else at 8 p.m.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello
to my new friend! You'll shoot your eye out, kid. Say what again? Say what again? I dare you! I double dare you,
motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time! What we've got
here is failure to communicate. Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
He hit our son!
Happy birthday, Polly.
Oh, no, I got me some. Well, I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 341. Happy Selection Sunday. If you're a fan of hoops and a collegiate hoops, hell yeah.
Indiana yeah. University, baby. It's gonna.
Is it their year?
Yeah.
They just lost to somebody bad, right? Am I making that up?
Yeah, Rutgers.
Woof.
Well, okay, like Rutgers isn't bad. I mean, Rutgers is the State University of New Jersey. The famous Big Ten school that historically everyone just loves in the Big Ten.
No,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sure Rutgers is fine.
They're gonna make the dances here. So if you're listening, you're a Rutgers fan, obviously. I know Indiana fans are listening and like, fuck you, Jeff. It is not Indiana's year. They will not be making the tournament, but it could be Purdue's year, maybe.
The funny part about me is it's like, I'm always like, how is a state university named Rutgers? And then I just like mentally bypassed Purdue. Same thing.
Yeah, but Purdue just sounds cooler. Rutgers, you know, is not, it's not a pleasant word.
Purdue's not a pleasant word either. And
Purdue is...
I think cats. Like, I just think immediately
it's got dew in it. It's got dew.
Yeah, but a dew, like morning dew. That's nice,
not the dew I associate with dew, my friend. When I hear dew, I hear poo poo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought you were gonna say mountain.
As they
dew.
Say in Star Wars Episode One, right? Is it poodoo or whatever they say?
Bantha poodoo.
Yeah.
I think
I love that.
My arm's coming down.
Yeah, your mic is really fucked. All right, we got Cherry today. We're going to be viewing Cherry from the Russo brothers, Tom Holland on Apple TV Plus. Little news, and then we're going to do a draft. I'm actually very excited for this draft. I think there's options that we all may not have thought of, but the other people may throw out there. And that is, free. I just chugged water. I can barely talk. Free things draft. So anything that is free, anything that you can get for free. I feel like there's some veto rules will be in effect. I don't think that'll be a problem. I have a long list. I think there's plenty of good options here.
I got like 10, but I'm afraid a lot of mine are going to get taken.
So we had somebody tweeted at us or posted on our Reddit that we should do a draft of the free bread you get at tables, but that you can't do 10 picks for that.
No.
Or you can't do 5, 10, 15, 20 picks for that. So I said, well, just do anything free. And Trill gets first pick tonight too. We're going to go reverse of the other day. So... Trill gets the first free pick of the day, which is exciting. He's currently this is where I wish we were a video pod sometime. Not only is his microphone now detached from the arm he uses for it, the arm is also detached from the desk.
He lost the wire. He lost everything.
He's essentially assembling a podcast kit as we go.
I had to hold my mic for this episode. I'm sorry.
Yeah, me too. No worries.
It's this arm's done. Yeah, I don't know what happened to it, but it lost the grip that
it's a fucking vice grip. How does it mess up that bad?
Well, because my desk lip isn't a full lip. It doesn't have full clearance for it. So the vice grip isn't like completely on it. There's parts of the vice grip that doesn't grab onto anything. So
I get what you're saying. Okay.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
You lost the washer.
Yeah, I just don't know. I maybe I'll just get one of those stands that sit on the ground and then I can put scarves on it and have like a real Steven Tyler type podcasting setup, which is what every man dreams of, honestly.
Yeah, that's the one thing I didn't give back with my Sirius kit was they gave us a stand and I didn't have to give that back. So I got that chilling somewhere in my apartment.
Yeah,
I'll send one over you. It's heavy as fuck.
Hold on. I got to move closer. There you go. Okay. Now, there we go. All right. I'm going to put my feet up on the desk now.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's the good stuff.
We're in flavor country now, boys.
What's happening other than that, though? Anything off the top?
I got my teeth whitened yesterday, and it sucks. It hurts really bad. It really hurts a lot. And I got two cavities filled, which is even worse. But I got all that done the same appointment. It was like a two-hour process, and just I can't really eat or drink anything, and there's pain nonstop.
Yeah, cavities are just a natural part of life for me right now. I every time I go to the dentist, I just expect to have a cavity or two.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just the ecosystem of my mouth is very hostile to my teeth being healthy, or I don't know, the 8 Diet Cokes I drank a day.
Potentially could be it, yeah.
Or like the trolley crawlers I eat. You know, for lunch sometime. I don't know.
The dentist was explaining to me because I was like, you know what? I don't actually know what a cavity is. Can you tell me what it is? And he's like, yeah, it's just bacteria that mixes with the stuff in your teeth and makes the stuff in your teeth into like a mush, like a disgusting mush. And I was like, that just made it. I want every cavity gone out of my body right now. That just sounds disgusting.
Yeah. I have two crowns. They just said, fuck it, and some teeth. And then I had to get two crowns independently put in. So yeah, you know, my teeth are like 13% fake at this point, I guess.
That's like, did you ever see the videos of those people on TikTok that were going to like Turkey to get veneers done in, even though they were like 19?
No, that doesn't surprise. Turkey's become like I think that it's like the big hair transplant tourism place now.
Yes. They're big on that.
Yeah, so it's become like kind of a cosmetic surgery travel medicine destination, I guess. They have these hair transplant like resorts almost where you go like fully inclusive. You get your hair transplant done and then you recover from your hair transplant at a nice-ish resort. I've looked at it, but I think there's too much work that has to be done with my hair transplant. I feel like in order to get the hair transplant like you can't be like balding in the front and the back. You just got to be balding at the front. And then you got to start taking the Propecia to stop that. And I, you know, like people take that drug and I think it works. And I took it for a while, but like, I just don't feel comfortable taking a diluted dose of a prostate cancer drug into perpetuity. It just doesn't, you know, so at some point you just got to say, fuck it. Bring out the still or what, not still. That's like a hedge trimmer. What, the wall? I'm sorry.
Bring
out the still to cut my hair.
I was about to say, don't do that. But there's another guy I saw on TikTok and I had DM'd with him before. He like essentially shaves off your hair and then he puts on like a glues on, like a serious.
Oh, I love that. Love those. They're
amazing.
I don't know why it gets me, but the videos of the people who get like the very like intensely glued on hair pieces.
Yeah.
And then after that, they like really style them up and they cut them. I don't know why those just, I like watching those videos.
They look great too. They look great. From like fucking Beans Erringer to like looking like a fashion model on H&M. It's amazing. The process.
Yeah. But that's too much of a lie. At least with a hair transplant, it's actually implanted into you and it's there. Whereas if it's glued, I mean, maybe it's the same as veneers or whatever, but it seems like too much work for something that is just fleeting, you know, because at some point you stop giving a shit. Like I part of me is like, yeah, it would be nice to have a full luxurious head of hair looking like Timothy Oliphant or whatever. Like it would be nice to have that. And then the other part of me is just like, you know, it is what it is. It's time to go. I had a good 30 something year run with it. you know, it didn't have the best hair, but it did its job.
The lucky thing for you though is that you at least have like a good bald head. You know what I mean? Like you have a good head for a shaved head. My head's way too big to ever have a shaved head. It just will never wear that well.
I do. Like, yeah, my head does look okay. Like bald. I don't have like a, you know, I don't know. I don't want to use any direct comparisons because it's kind of mean spirited, but I don't look like a Roger from American Dad.
No, you look
like Landon Donovan. That's been the most accurate thing that you've said. Is when your hair grows a little long, you look like Landon Donovan.
Zinedine Zidane. Like a less sharp.
Sure. Yeah. Go with that.
Oh man. One of the best sports moments of my lifetime was him.
It just was incredible.
Headbutting. And that was amazing.
That was incredible. That was 2006. I remember I was at my friend's house watching that game. And when they went to the replay of it, like the whole room erupted. It was incredible.
That was probably my favorite World Cup of my lifetime.
Oh, me too. By far.
I don't know why.
Oh, really? Oh, Mike. ESPN butchered that World Cup so bad. The 2010 World Cup is my favorite. That's when they had the ball, the fucking just absurd ball, too. One of the most ridiculous ball. Like, it was like
Vuvuzelas.
Yeah, those as well.
Yeah.
But what was the name of the ball? The South Africa ball.
Yeah, they're always Adidas balls, and Adidas always gives them a name like the Adidas Prime Striker Alpha Series.
I think it was like the Jabalani or something, or Jubilani.
That thing moved
so much, and there was a huge controversy over it.
That's right.
Goals. Diego Forlan won the Golden Boot, I believe. Yeah, for that World Cup. Mm-hmm. That World Cup was fun. That was the USA World Cup. That was the Landon Donovan goal against Algeria.
Yeah,
and then they lost to Ghana in extra time.
The actual competition in the 2006 World Cup, I think, was so much better. But I do agree, rooting for the U.S. was much more fun.
Part of it was fun though, because like I feel like Italy, you know, winning it and being so competitive brought out like a lot of like Italian American rooting interest. Yeah. That
which is one of my least favorite things in the world. By the way, I hate that.
Fifth generation removed from fucking immigration.
Oh, you like Americans rooting for like their.
But it's like I don't root for the USA in the World Cup. I root for Italy. It's like, oh, your parents from Italy. It's like, yeah, my six generations removed from Italy.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like you've been in Hartford for fucking 70 years. Your family. It's like,
I don't know.
Root for the U.S.
I thought that element was fun. And of course, you get it with Spain and then Germany and everyone else. But it just felt like France won the last one. That's right. You don't see a lot of like. French American people celebrate.
No.
Yeah, but there was like the Italian.
You get it with I feel like Italy, being Italy and in Germany.
Yeah,
Italy, German Americans, and I feel like there's more missing. Like Ireland never really does well at all. Period. So like, if they did though, like people would go ballistic.
Yeah,
I remember. I think it was Cameroon had some of the greatest jerseys of all time. I don't remember if they won it. They wore it in that World Cup, but they had these jerseys that had claw marks on the side of it. They're super cool.
Yeah, the African nations typically have some of the best. I know 2010 Cameroon had a lot of controversy. Samuel Eto'o and company. They had a lot of controversy, but they usually African nations just have some pretty cool fucking jerseys. I think it's Cameroon. They usually go with like they get some neon green sometimes.
I always like Nigeria's uniforms. The green, like that forest green on the white, it was always so cool. They have an awesome.
They should do the World Cup every 2 years. I know it dilutes the value.
The funny thing is, I will say my one note on the U.S. It's not like the USA is like it's like how can you not root for them? They're always cracking in the World Cup. Like they didn't even fucking qualify for it. So it's like I get not rooting for them, but it is funny because like it's interesting always talking to people who are not from the United States who just care so much more about their clubs than they do than the international team in the country they're from.
Yeah, like troops.
Like we have it here at Barstool. We have troops who's from England, Zaz from Africa. They're both huge. Like they care so much more about Arsenal than they ever would. Their international team.
To be fair to Zaz, Zimbabwe's team will never be good. But in Troops' case, England is always quite good and gets their heart broken every year.
I think it just depends from which continent you're on. Anecdotal observation, but I can never see anyone from South America being more passionate about a club team than their own national squad.
Yeah.
And same with North America too. Like, you know, U.S. loves some good old fashioned rooting for the U.S. in international competitions. We just aren't.
That was an interesting thing. When I went to London, I did talk to somebody about that because they were talking to me about it. It was someone who was native there and was saying stuff about like the NFL and how he's like, I'm a huge like fantasy football player. Like I love the NFL, love the red zone. And we were talking about like World Cup and Champions League. And it's like, yeah, Champions League, you know, to many people, especially players, like it's a bigger deal. Like obviously the pride of the country, but in terms of like, that may have to do with the winning every year thing too. It's competitive. I agree.
I think the World Cup should be a two-year thing. I think the hand of God just broke England's brain.
Never recovered.
Like in a lot of different ways. I'm just going to put a stake in the ground and say that like that really fucked up England.
I watched 2010 USA England. It was a 1-1 draw. England scored 4 minutes in, and then Clint Dempsey spun around and had a very long shot that went off the keeper, Robert Green, I believe his name was, and just rolled into the net. And I watched it at the ESPN zone in Times Square. It was the last day the ESPN zone was open, and they were just giving out free food. Just giving out free. They're like, we don't give a shit. We're closing down tomorrow. Inventory. And they were like, if you want to buy any of the arcade games upstairs, let us know. And they were like, for like thousands of dollars. But they were like, if you want to leave with like the giant pinball, let us know. Like there's, you can go buy it.
Who is the tall, I don't know if he's playing anymore, the tall English soccer player?
Peter Crouch?
Peter Crouch, man. Yeah, he was playing as of 2 years ago, I think. I don't know.
I loved playing as him as you know, like when I was big into FIFA and FIFA 10, and then I do the robot dance when I scored a goal with him, and it was the best looking thing.
He's like 6'6". He has to be old. He had to be like 37 now or something. He's probably gone.
My FIFA celebration is I would do the windmill like arm thing, like close to midfield, and then I'd get close to midfield and I'd hit the robot. Mm-hmm. That was my FIFA celebration.
I'm a flip guy. I like, give me a couple back flips. That always felt the most gratifying.
I know people complain.
The Robbie Keane celebration was always my favorite in any FIFA game. The roll and the double gun.
Yeah, I know people complain about FIFA now because it's kind of become the same thing as Madden, but yep. I still think FIFA's light
years. I still like it.
It's still light years ahead of Madden in terms of like general fun of play. Mm-hmm. And yes, it also, you know, the fluidity and maybe like soccer as a game itself, because there's no stoppages to advertise like head and shoulders. Maybe it just lends itself better to that video game experience, but it you know, they do this card thing and whatever, but from a gameplay perspective, it's still
the ultimate stuff is almost even bigger for FIFA internet. Like you got those viral videos, people like on like unpacking like a Cristiano Ronaldo.
I opened a Ronaldo gold. I remember one that was like, I hope this is a Ronaldo gold. I hope this is a Ronaldo. And he opens it and it's like a Ronaldo gold. And he's like, oh my God, Mumsy, it's a Ronaldo gold. I opened me a Ronaldo gold. Let's go down to what's the name? Sainsbury and get a wrap with mint jelly in it. And some beans and some
bean and mint jelly wrap as they get in England.
might be my favorite trail impression we've ever had.
Oh geez, Louise. That's the same.
All right. USA World Cup though, you know, 2028.
No. Yeah, that we'll you know good. What? I'm excited.
2026.
We'll import enough good players to be good then.
Are they doing the same thing they did in 94? Was it 94 when it was here last? Was it 90? I think it was 94, right? It's just all over the country. It's not like...
Oh, it's always all over the country.
Yeah, I'm just saying like that doesn't make a whole lot of sense from a travel perspective. But
every World Cup's all over the country that it's in.
Yeah, for us, so across multiple time zones.
Germany's the size of Texas.
So we're sharing it. we're sharing it with Canada and Mexico. So they have Montreal, Edmonton, Toronto.
That's cool.
Mexico City, Monterey, and Guadalajara. And then we have Rose Bowl, MetLife, FedEx Field, which get FedEx Field out of there. AT&T Stadium. Arrowhead Stadium, Denver. So Mile High. I love throwing like different. You're like, yeah, you're playing in Denver, by the way. Houston, NRG, M&T in Baltimore, the Mercedes-Benz in Atlanta, Lincoln Financial, Nashville.
You're gonna
Seattle,
get the Mercedes-Benz trying to go playing from fucking the swamp in MetLife to
Santa Clara, Orlando, Miami, Cincinnati, Paul Brown, and then Gillette. I think the final
Rose Bowl's weird. I mean, the Rose Bowl is a really cool venue. It's a very beautiful venue, but it's also gigantic. know, maybe they'll fill it up. I don't know. And it's not like AT&T Stadium is not gigantic too. So I might retract that. But
where is the final going to be? I thought the final was going to be a Cowboy, which I hate. The final shouldn't be in a fucking dome.
It shouldn't be indoors. It should be outdoors. It should be It should be at Soldier Field in Chicago.
Which actually is not even Chicago's not even on the list, which is actually incredibly surprising.
What's the biggest outdoor stadium in the U.S.?
The biggest outdoor stadium it's Michigan, and then Michigan, I think
Penn State, Ohio State, and then Tennessee, and A&M.
Yeah,
I believe are the five.
I mean, Michigan's like 105.
Michigan's just one level, just fucking goes up. I am not a Michigan Stadium fan, but like the Big House is cool. The Rose Bowl is also a very sneaky 93,000.
Yeah, well, the Rose Bowl gigantic. Michigan Stadium's cool in concept. Michigan Stadium does not sound cool if you were to attend a game. Maybe unless you were a student there, but it is there's the one level. I don't know. I like stadiums like that though.
The finals at MetLife. Oh, just talk Thanks. About no fucking identity. Just no identity. Swamp. No fucking just next to the, which I'm going to that mall soon. We're doing a day trip to that mall. I'm fucking excited. But
one thing I've never understood, this is stadium. Maybe I've vocalized it. I really like the Chicago White Sox baseball stadium. I know it's kind of long in the tooth at this point.
They're getting rid of it soon.
Renovations. Yeah. But it's like, it's of that, it's of that like 90s vintage where they didn't quite like they missed out on doing like the whole retro style stadium and whatever. And like I have mixed feelings about the retro style stadium. Like I think Camden was probably the flag bearer for best in class. And then everyone else kind of like the one that would like really, really was weird was the Ranger Stadium they built in 94 and they kind of did retro, but it almost was like too big to fully work for them. And then they just were like, OK, we're not doing that again. We're just going to build a warehouse. A baseball warehouse.
Literally, yeah.
but I actually forgot what I was going to say. Oh, yeah, the Chicago Stadium. The only thing I don't understand about it is why it's not faced to have a view of the skyline from home plate.
I know that's a big issue.
Maybe there's like a building permit or maybe there's like an orientation thing they couldn't do. I'm sure there's a reason for it. But I think like if that stadium was turned to face the skyline, like I think that would be one of the coolest views in all of baseball.
That would be very cool.
I think somebody's answered that for. I think you said it on the pod before.
Probably.
Gotta find that answer.
That's the problem with doing like 365 episodes and having limited brain power by myself is I'd start talking about things about
limited stadium.
Like very specific complaints about the orientation of baseball stadiums. grievances. They should have the final on like Carmel, Indiana Dad's Club soccer field.
The Field of Dreams is put in a big cornfield in Iowa.
Build an outdoor stadium. It'd be awesome.
they should do the stadium on like a elevated platform.
Like, you know, build it out of the Sears Tower like they did with that tennis match in Dubai.
Oh god.
Build a platform.
They paid like Roger Federer $65 million to stand up there and very hesitantly like lob balls back and forth.
That picture is so scary. I was like, there's not an amount.
If your first instinct though up there is to not just power one off the fucking roof, then you're not human.
I don't know, man. Remember when they opened up it was before the Burj Khalifa, but it was that hotel with the helicopter pad that sticks out. It looks like a sail.
Well that's what they built tennis court on, right?
Yeah, I think so. But Tiger Woods also had him out, I think, when it was first built for him just to crush, you know, 350 yards, probably more off of the top of the stadium. But they always like have a long history of doing little gimmicks on top of that thing.
Yeah, he couldn't pay me enough to get on top of that platform. It's just horrifying. Like a gust of wind and you just fly off. I know that's not how it works, but I just be horrified.
They always say the fear of heights is always amplified by like a little desire of like wanting to know what the experience of just falling off of it would be like.
So fucked.
I've heard that theory.
Go to Topgolf. You go to Topgolf for the thrill of being on that second deck.
I love the thrill of eating the loaded nachos and just I go to Top Golf just with a pitching wedge to try to play like the 65 yard, like little targets.
Do you think Top Golf should be cheaper depending on what level you're on?
I don't know the pricing structure of Top Golf. The only time I've been to Top Golf has been like parts of like events or you know, things that have been comped. And so I don't know how much it costs for me just to walk into a Top Golf and say one Top Golf, please.
Mm-hmm. Two Top Golfs today, please.
Two Top Golfs. Did you pay by the bucket or the balls, or you paid by time?
You pay by time.
Okay.
Yeah, you pay by time.
What if you did? What if they did both? You
buy 100 Top Golfs.
You always remember being a kid at the driving range and then going out, like running out 15 yards to get your little like flop, your
little chip that fell off. Yeah,
miss hits. Yeah, yep. You ran out of buckets and the balls.
Like, oh, fuck, I'm get away.
This episode brought to you by Trifecta Nutrition. I'm always reading this when I'm hungry. Actually, I will say, I won't talk about this in this ad read because that would be contradicting. Trifecta, though, is fantastic meal prep. Great, especially for middle of the week. It's meals backed by nutrition science. They taste fantastic. Very simple way to get into the best shape of your life. Eating healthy doesn't have to suck, and Trifecta is there to do that for you. Again, convenient. It'll help you stick to nutritional goals. If you want to gain weight, lose weight, no matter what it is, Trifecta is there for you. Never frozen, organic, gluten-free. I think I memorized this one. I think it's animal-level welfare. Let me just check. It is animal welfare level five. No wasted time cooking, just easy meal prepping, done right, done efficient. It's not even prep, really, just meals. Fantastic stuff. Elite athletes use it too. And Trifecta right now is giving you 40% off meal prep with code LIGHTS. Go to Trifecta, T-R-I-F-E-C-T-A, nutrition.com/lights for this exclusive offer with code LIGHTS. Thank you to Trifecta Nutrition. Not a lot of news today. Actually, almost no news whatsoever. First up, though, this is the story that never dies. Avatar has overtaken Avengers Endgame once again for the top spot, which is funny because now Disney, like, this is the first time I think since Disney fully has owned it. Maybe not. I think Disney, the timeline on that is confusing to me. But these are just both Disney's movies now.
Yep.
So now they can just absolutely flex. But you know what? I made this comment too. Well, I rooted for Avengers to do it because we felt like we were such a part of that, and it was cool to experience the thing. Avatar breaking the record was the better achievement because it was so organic where, you know what, whatever. Give Jim Cameron the fucking title. Let him have it. Even though this is going to go back and forth for a while, I'd imagine. You got to think Avengers is going to get re-released again. And they're so close that I would think that it might, though Avengers is so long that I don't know. But I feel like there could be another moving of this again at some point. But congrats to our good friend Jim Cameron.
I've really, since starting this podcast, come around on Jim Cameron.
I've come around on a lot of things that I didn't like when we first started this podcast.
Because I've gone back and I watched, like, you know, I watch his old, not old, I mean, they're old, yeah. Like, they're not old to me because I don't want them to be old. I don't want True Lies to be old. But he doesn't miss. The man doesn't miss. And at this point, it's like, who cares who like has the highest grossing movie of all time? I think like the reason I wanted to see it happen was just because you wanted to see it. You want to see if it can do it because you're living in the moment. You're in the
part of it.
Yeah, well, you're in the phenomenon, you know, and it's like something happening, and like it's always like NFL records, right? Like you want to see a record being broken because it's just it's interesting. But when it's like this, and it just is like, it's, who cares what movie it is? It's cool to just see it happen, I guess. And the fact that they re-released it in China, and like people 10, 11, 12, is it 12 years for Avatar now?
2009, right?
Yeah, something like that. Like there's still a vested interest in Avatar for people to go to cinemas and see it. I still think that's really cool. Especially if they're doing the 3D thing, because I think it's probably one of three movies that were properly executed in 3D from the big 3D phenomenon of 2008 through 2013 or whenever it ended. Because most of the movies were just like, okay, Alvin and the Chipmunks chipwrecked in 3D, and they just kind of did the 3D shit in post, and it wasn't really designed for it, and Avatar was just created to be that way. So
some poor schlub at working at the AMC in China just has to dig out a mothballed bunch of fucking blue and red 3D glasses to get the dust off for the people coming to see Avatar 11 years later, which is great. But I do love the idea of Bob Chapek just sitting there going, let them fight, while the two of these movies just battle back and forth for the dominance of the number one spot. And it's funny because we do get to say that they own it, but obviously the money didn't go to Disney. All the money went to Fox. So it's like they obviously earned all that out of Endgame, but the bulk of it went to Avatar, went to Fox.
What's James Cameron's net worth? And not that it means anything when you
I
Google.
Would guess.
I'm gonna guess 400 million.
I was gonna say like 300 to like 275, something like that.
The only reason I say that is you got to think there were some, like, you know, the way they like structured the deals in terms of like profit sharing or whatever. Obviously, if you're James Cameron, you can negotiate whatever you want up front. But he had to make a very significant amount of his net worth off of
700 million.
Okay, that's not surprising either. I that's not shocking, because I just feel like he had to make so much off of Avatar with how much money that movie made, and the fact that, you know, I'm sure before he had deals where he took home a lot of the money off of it, because he's a golden boy. Like, anything he makes will make money, and he's a guaranteed, you know, success for the studios. And like, you got to actually like pay money to get him. But Avatar made so much money, probably took home a lot off of that.
He's a blockbuster king. He's like one of those guys too, where almost like Chris Nolan, where he knows how to make a blockbuster but also have it critically well received, which is a very rare talent. Sort of in today, or even in movies in general. So, I mean, that's something worth paying for.
Yeah. Well, and I still think it's funny to make fun of him, though, because
absolutely.
I think all directors have that tendency, but I think him, he's kind of like superhuman. I do feel like when you
he's a dick too. Like,
yeah, but when you get to that level of, it's just like, I don't want to root for someone to be a dick, but The two groups of creatives that I feel like are given free rein to be dicks are very successful and good directors and authors.
Mm.
Do you want, like,
just part of his process, that sort of thing?
Yeah, but like, there's also, I mean, it's good to hear, like, when an actor says, like, oh, this director is really easy to work with and they're a good person. It's like, yeah, they're a good person. And the other thing we also like to hear is, this director knows everything that's going on. They know what's being delivered to the catering table. They know like every detail about the props that are being brought on. They just know every single detail about the production. And that's what James Cameron is going to. And mm-hmm. because of that extreme type A personality, it's why he's successful. I think we like both of them, folks. I think there's room for both at the table. Now, we don't like stories about like directors, you know, forcing someone to get into a car that's not working and then like break their leg.
Yep.
Like that's not necessarily like the positive type of dick. So I'm not saying like unilaterally, but like if it's someone like Jim Cameron who like is simply a dick because an actor's like, well, I think we should shoot this scene this way. And maybe Jim Cameron's like, I'm Jim Cameron. I'm Jimmy Cameron. Yeah. Look at me. You want to see my ID? You want to see it? He pulled out like an Ontario driver's license and just says, this is James Cameron.
It's just fucking Ben Affleck telling, maybe we shouldn't do this scene where I like ride a animal cracker between Liv Tyler's boobies. And he's like, yeah, you know what? Maybe you're wrong. You know, I directed fucking Titanic, which doesn't even come out yet.
That's kind he's like, I saw Argo. Yeah, it was okay. You did okay, right? There. You did okay.
Netflix is like, oh, just wait for this fucking director's cut where I'm going to talk about you in the behind the scenes. Whoa, you motherfucker, James Cameron.
Next up on our ad list here, another fantastic sponsor, Upstart. Get that credit card. Maybe have some credit card debt you want to take off there. Well, guess what, folks? Upstart can help you face it, help you pay it off. If you use credit cards to pay, maybe for unexpected expenses, you know, it can be overwhelming. Got to manage all that stuff. And Upstart is the fast and easy way to get a personal loan to pay off your debt all online, whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses. Over 500,000 people have used Upstart to get a simple fixed monthly payment. Upstart finds smarter rates with trusted partners because they assess more than just your credit score. With a 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate up front for loans from $1,000 to $50,000. You can get approved the same day and receive funds as fast as up to one business day. That is why right now you got to go to upstart.com/lights. That's upstart.com/lights. Got to use the URL. Helps us out. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. That's upstart.com/lights. Very helpful service. I wanted to note about food, but I didn't want to do it after the last ad read. I decided, fuck it. So this is my last pot as a 20-year-old. In my 20s.
Oh, yeah, in your 20s. Good clarification.
Must be in my 30s. So I figured treat myself. Little Caesars brought back the pretzel pizza.
Oh.
It's awesome. It's maybe my favorite of like the chain pizza places, which I don't particularly like. I just don't love them. Like I don't like all those pizzas. Man, the pretzel pizza is awesome. It's fantastic.
There's nothing like quite the pairing of a chain pizza, video games, and like a 2-liter of like Pepsi though. Just like there's something about that trio that just hits in a way that you can. It's indescribable.
There's like only like three things I miss really. Since like going gluten free, one of them is actual pizza.
Mm.
They have like gluten free crust you get from Domino's and Papa John's.
It's not the same.
And they're okay. It's not the same. The other one is fried chicken, like Popeye's fried chicken.
Oh yeah.
And then the last one is a jumbo soft pretzel, like the Bavarian legends of yore.
That's why you would like the pretzel pizza from Little Caesars.
What about a Bavarian legend? Do you miss those?
Yeah, I miss the Bavarian legend.
Who was the ripoff one that you sent us? You sent us a ripoff Bavarian legend. It was called like the Wurttemberg story or something like that.
Yeah, it was a packaged Bavarian legend, but it just wasn't. It was like, I think it was like 3/4 the size of the Bavarian legend, which, I mean, come on, if you're going to release a pretzel, you're going to say it's like a mythically proportioned, it cannot be smaller than the Bavarian legend.
You know that when you Google the Bavarian legend, I'm like the second result.
Yeah, or I thought you were the first.
Oh, yeah, so that's it. Yeah, I'm the first result, and then the video that we made of our Bavarian legend episode is like that thumbnail is the second one. So we fucking made that pretzel. We're like did so much free advertising for it. And now AMC probably doesn't even sell it anymore.
£2 of soft goodness.
They sold like 3 additional Bavarian legends.
that's a huge share of their sales margin though.
So Jeff, going back to you turning 30, I spent the weekend exclusively listening to 2009, 2011 pop songs about like going out and having a good time. Which is like what they were all about. Like, whoa, tonight we're young. Oh, let's all get sprung. They all sound like Starship.
You sent the lyrics to our chat, but you did send the best word from that era.
Yeah, it was the like a G6 song. It was like popping blizzard. Bottles in the sky like a blizzard. When we do it right, getting slizzard.
That's just such a just like a G6 is so entrenched in a very specific era.
Yes, it's like Uncut Gems kind of captured that exact era perfectly right. There's gonna be a movie like that does like 2011-12 and they have to use like a G6.
It is a very weird moment in time because it's like this pre-recession period, but the pop music doesn't really reflect the dire straits of like the job market for millennials.
You wanted fucking like Pink making a song about like Lehman Brothers or something like.
No, but I think pop music now has a darker tone. I think the subject matter compared to getting slizzard is a lot more emotionally complex, even though it's not. It's not like
brothers got slizzard. What do you think got them in that situation in the first place?
Just millennials being 22. And it's like, tonight is the most important night of our lives. Tonight, tonight we're going to leave it all out in the dance floor, baby.
One of the most 2009 songs that exists is Cobra Starship. It's Good Girls Go Bad featuring Leighton Meester by Cobra Starship. That is a firm 2009 song.
What's the 303 song where it's like, tell your boyfriend that like I'm not a vegetarian because I don't want no beef with, or you know what I'm saying? Like it's the one with Kesha, right?
What's the Rihanna feature song that was like 2011? Because that song, I think I've heard 200,000 times in the span of like from 2011 to 2012.
The Rihanna feature song?
It's like a Rihanna feature song on an EDM track.
Oh,
we found
Hopeless like, Place. We found we love found in a hopeless love. Place. Yeah. That song I heard 200,000 times, bare minimum in that two-year
period. That's a Rihanna song, I think.
Yeah,
Calvin Harris just produced it.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
that's
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah,
shout out to yeah guy,
it's
Harris.
Don't Trust Me by 303, released on June 1st, 2008. I'm a vegetarian. And that's not the way it goes. But
do you know Calvin Harris's real name?
Oh, it's something weird, right?
You get like something Calvin, true, I forget. Calvin Portman or like
Adam Richard Wiles.
Mm-hmm.
So the Grammys are tonight, right?
That was literally what I was about to say next.
The Grammys, out of all of the award shows, are the most corrupt and crooked and meaningless, in my opinion.
But they look so cool. The phonogram or whatever it's called looks awesome.
They look cool, but like the Grammys, like in terms of who votes and in terms of what wins is, and there are very specific examples. Like the big one is like Robert Plant and Alison Krauss won for an album in like 2002 or something like that. And they're up against like other good albums from that era. And they're just like, give it to the Led Zeppelin guy, I guess. And then of course there's like the Macklemore winning over like probably one of the best rap albums ever. But definitely of like that era in the Kendrick Lamar album.
You're still describing Macklemore in one of the best rap albums ever, right?
Yeah, well, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis.
And Ryan Lewis. Don't you dare forget.
I went into the moped store. I'm like, fuck it. I said, moped guy, what's my budget? I don't know. I don't know nothing about mopeds.
Brilliance. Remember, what's his great tweet? 9/11, Bush knocked down the towers.
Yes.
And he just never deleted it. I respect that.
You can't after that point. But this year's Grammys is, I don't know, would The Weeknd have classified for like, he was snubbed for this year, right? Like Blinding Lights was probably the biggest song of the year and didn't get a single nomination. That was simply because the nominating committee at the Grammys was mad he did the Super Bowl thing and not like some Grammy commitment.
He's boycotting the Grammys.
Yeah, he's boycotting.
Right? He should. Other people should boycott the Grammys. Blinding Lights is a legitimately great pop song. And for that, like being one of the biggest songs in the year and not being even nominated for Record of the Year or whatever is just, it's embarrassing, quite honestly.
I remember that they did that with My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. It came out right in that really weird zone where it wouldn't be nominated for that year, but they're like, oh, it's going to be nominated next year. Don't worry. It just didn't. It just wasn't. Like
best album
sure
Grammys. I mean, they like. Hold on, let me pull up the Grammy Award for album.
Arcade Fire won for The Suburbs that one year, and then everyone on Twitter was like when Twitter was still becoming like a big thing. They're like The Suburbs, who the fuck is The Suburbs?
They did it with Beck too. Remember the Beyonce year?
Yeah,
they freaked the everyone freaked the fuck out. I mean, right.
Kanye pretended to go up on stage.
yeah, that's right. Oh my god, I forgot about that.
Yeah, well, like 2006 when they gave the Record of the Year to the U2 album, but it was against like Paul McCartney album, so that's a toss up there for the Grammy committee. And then they threw in the Mariah Carey and Late Registration. Late Registration probably should have won. Quite honestly, if you look at some of these other things, like 2005, Ray Charles won, like over American Idiot, which.
Amazing
and the album. College Dropout and Confessions. I mean, I even think like 2004, like Speaker Box, The Love Below was the first time a rap hip hop album won Album of the Year.
I mean,
Lauryn Hill won in 1999. I think that's more R&B. I don't know. It's kind of a neo soul R&B thing.
But, I remember Kanye actually like blamed himself for My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy not getting nominated because they dropped that and Watch the Throne like very similar time frames, I think. But the Grammys are the Grammys are now performances. That's basically what the Grammys is there for the performances.
Well, and all Adele has to do is release like an album with all empty tracks on it and she would win. And I think Adele's great. Like I think 21 was fantastic. 25 was not a very cohesive album, and it won over like Lemonade, which was a better album. And then there's some other I mean, I could go on, right? But I'm just trying to say, like, I think Taylor Swift's going to win for Folklore. And I mean, I think Folklore is fine, but Folklore, I don't know, man.
Yeah. I mean, they usually, I think they like to go with mostly safe picks if they can. But it is, all I want to see this year is what we were talking about in the award talk, which is I want to see someone cradling a bunch of Emmys, like a bunch of babies. I just love that.
It'll happen
so much.
Like,
it'll happen.
A bunch of Grammys, rather.
Yeah.
I just love Billie Eilish did that last year. She won all the awards.
Dude, it's, I love it. I love that picture so much. Always.
It looks like, yeah, it looks like Taylor Swift, yeah, heavy favorite with Dua Lipa just behind.
Dua Lipa, I mean, if Dua Lipa won, I wouldn't be mad because Dua Lipa is fantastic. That's a great pop album. But I think what's going to hold Dua Lipa back is Folklore is more of the time. Dua Lipa, Future Nostalgia released right before COVID hit. And if COVID didn't hit, like, that would have been the soundtrack for a year, because it's dance music. Whereas like Taylor Swift's like recorded in isolation, sombery Folklore is more like, that's very COVID period music, which is why I think it's going to win.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Best new artist. It actually looks like they maybe have now.
Well, it's Phoebe Bridgers and Megan Thee Stallion.
Yeah. They're the two favorites. I always appreciate the best new artist category is always a good chuckle, because sometimes the nominees are just, You've heard him for years.
Best two, Ozzy Osbourne.
Because there was,
it's so great. They know that.
Like, I remember Chainsmokers in 2017.
The way Halsey carried the Chainsmokers into national prominence is just an all time. What?
That's pure heresy against our good boys.
Don't
Scott Franklin and Adam.
No, don't say those things about Andrew Taggart and Alex Paul.
Oh,
Drew Taggart, excuse me, is the proper name to say it, I believe. I would say that the KB will walk into the office some days and I'll be like, hey, tell me, what are the name of the chain smokers? Rips him off quicker than he rips off World Capitals.
That and what's our other good boy, Paul David Hewson? Bet you trolls know who that is.
Yeah, who's Paul? Do you know who Paul David Hewson is?
Stage name.
Post Malone?
No.
Fraud.
It's Bono.
No, you're big time fraud. That's Bono, my man. Oh.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Yes,
Paul David Hewson.
Yeah, dude. There's no way Bono didn't come out of the womb with a swoop back haircut
and gigantic
sunglasses and just say, I'm Bono.
Why is he English?
Because I can't do an Irish. I can't do an English either.
There's really no more news. We'll talk all Justice League a week from Sunday. Zack Snyder did have a comment I did like, though. He said Marvel is doing this popular, according to the New York Times, this popular action comedy thing with a heart, an effort to duplicate that is insanity because they're so good at it. What DC had with mythology at an epic level, and we were going to take them on this amazing journey. Whether you agree with how he did it or not, I think that's a very good comment.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, like I know like he gets a lot of shit, like Zack Snyder doesn't get it, like he doesn't get stupid. And like, I guess, again, that's all fine. But I think that overarching idea is, I think he was absolutely right.
Spot on. So no, absolutely no fucking idea. No point trying to replicate what Marvel's doing. You just need to do something that's in a different lane, but you need to do it as good or better if you can.
And it's not to say, and like we've, yeah, like we've liked a couple of the ones that, like, again, I've enjoyed Shazam, I enjoyed Aquaman, but like, I think there's still a balance where they could add some, like, a little comedy, a little humor to it. Cause, I mean, any like drama has that, right? But I agree largely with the idea of what he's saying there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think you could use like a little bit of heart. It doesn't need to be like stone cold, but you don't need to go like full on with what Marvel does, which are action comedies. Yeah. So that was a good comment. We'll talk more about Justice League on Sunday though.
I'm looking at some of the older, like the 90s. My favorite one is in 1993, Eric Clapton winning for Unplugged. It's like, here's an album of songs you already made.
That's like when
the Grammys, like, this is, I mean, Unplugged is, Eric Clapton Unplugged is probably the most defining album of boomers, I'd have to think.
Boomers or Xers?
Boomers, man.
I would consider that early Xers, no?
Eric Clapton?
Am I wrong on that?
Like in 93, Xers would be listening to, you know, Seattle grunge or, you know, maybe even like what else was nominated for that year? I mean, the year before was like REM, like that's extra music to me. Like Eric Clapton saying like, okay, you know, that electric guitar that you guys love me to play. What if I played an acoustic one and we slowed it down a little bit?
My dad's an Xer and he loves Eric Clapton. Like he's obsessed with Eric Clapton. So that's my barometer for that, which may not be correct to use for that. But I just always assume that he's more of an Xer guy because his music was all like what? Like 70s into 80s into 90s, right?
Yeah.
But young Xer's territory.
But Eric Clapton did 70s, but I think coming out of the 60s and like collaborating with the Beatles and everyone, I don't know. I don't want to get into too much Eric Clapton.
You're way smarter at this than me. So if someone's screaming right now at the radio, just know that Trill is probably right now. I'm probably wrong.
I think the general thing about the Xers is nobody really knows much about the Xers or cares.
And that's also very true.
they are the forgotten modern generation.
Yeah. Very true. All they knew is that they were not big fans of authority.
No, they were not.
All right, let's talk Cherry. Cherry, Apple TV Plus, directed by the Russo brothers, coming off the Avengers movies. They obviously produced 21 Bridges as well. Cherry drifts from college dropout to army medic in Iraq, anchored only by his true love, Emily. But after returning from the war with PTSD, his life spirals into drugs and crime as he struggles to find his place in the world. Tom Holland is the big one here, folks. He's
the cherry.
He is. Yeah, he's the main. Yes, he is. He's the star of the movie. Again, Apple TV Plus and Apple TV Plus original joins the likes of Wolfwalkers, which is awesome, by the way. Yes. Palmer, really solid movie. Greyhound, The Banker, On the Rocks. I say, but I know some people think much higher about it than I do. I don't know. People are going opposite directions. Cherry. Of those six movies, this is the first Apple TV Plus original that I really didn't care for. I didn't love love a lot of these. Like, I didn't love Greyhound, but like they all kind of like cleared the bar enough for me. I think The Banker, probably the worst out of the five, is probably what I would have. Yeah, I do. So it's below On the Rocks. But Cherry, I thought Tom Holland's acting was solid. I think it's getting panned big time by critics. I don't think it's that bad, but I don't think it's very good. And I can appreciate the attempt by the Russo brothers. I think they really were like, fuck it, we're going to get artistic as hell. Like, they tried to do a lot of very random, different things stylistically as directors. I just don't think it worked. And I think in some spots it was almost distracting. And we'll get into that. But I was worried that Tom Holland might be the thing I didn't love. I thought Tom Holland was fine in this. I thought the story is fine. It just also dragged, by the way, a little bit for me. I thought it felt a little bloated. But again, it just stylistically, some of like the directing, it just distracted. And I know they looked like they were trying to do some different things and they kind of had free reign to do what they wanted here. But it just didn't really work for me. I gave it a 59 out of 100. I didn't have an issue getting through the movie, but it wasn't very good in my humble opinion. Ken Jack, I will let you go next. You have a similar score to mine, I believe.
Yeah, so I think that the stuff that this movie does well, it does really well, but like the stuff it does poorly, it does really, really poorly. And I think it kind of splits down the middle as far as that spectrum goes. Like the performances, I think across the board, mostly from Holland's end, are really, really good. And there's like a certain level of like thoughtfulness to it, and that there's like some isolated scenes in this movie that are really good. Like you were saying, like the artistic like kind of thought process that the Russos put into a lot of the way some of this movie was shot was cool. And in isolated moments, it did look really cool. But in the grand scheme, it was just kind of turned it into a little bit of a mess. It's a little bit of like a collage, which didn't really totally come together cohesively. I think the big problem is that, number one, this movie's too long. It's way too long. It's like, I think it's probably 2 hours 20 or something like that. This could have been done. Yeah, so it could have been like a half hour shorter, I think.
And start the movie when he joins the military. Start it there.
Fill
in the gap somehow.
We would have been totally fine without that. And there's too much. Like you said, like we were saying before, just too long. I think there's too much going on between not only just stylistically what they're trying to do, but like all the different facets of Cherry's life that they're trying to explain throughout the movie. And also like how each one of them is like, it's almost like they're trying to dive into a different genre with each one. And you know how like when we talk about some other movies that are like genre fluid and they like go between genres, this wasn't really doing that. It was like blocks of different genre, which didn't mesh together at all. And I also feel like you can kind of telegraph what's going to happen with this movie from start to finish, especially what's going to happen at the end, which I despise the ending of this movie. I really, really hated the ending of this movie. But it, like I said before, it's just there's some stuff in the beginning that works well. And I did honestly do like a lot of the acting in the movie. So I ended up with a 53 out of 100 on it.
Yeah, you know, movies based off of the book Cherry by Nico Walker, which is based off of, it's a novel, but it's autobiographical.
Semi-autobiographical.
I haven't read it, and I wish I had, because what this movie felt like it was trying to do was it was trying to feel like it was, you know, when you read a book, when you read a novel, like, I'm explaining reading to the audience, by the way, but like, obviously when you read a book, there's a lot left to the imagination. There's a lot left to your interpretation, and you can kind of like, you know, use your imagination to create the scenes and picture what they look like and whatever. And this movie felt like it was trying to do that. And it kind of overcompensated with the lack of what is a solid story. Whereas like, if it's a book, I think, you know, you have a longer time to tell that story and there's more time to flesh it out and might be more cohesive in the book itself. But in terms of a movie, it kind of followed the same path as like Hollywood's treatment of addiction stories. Like, outside of Trainspotting, with Trainspotting is probably the only movie centered around addiction that I think is like fantastic. And I'm sure there's some other ones, but that's the A1 example that kind of sticks up in my head. You know, this movie just falls into some of the same familiar traps in terms of like, you know, the like, okay, you know, they're happy and then they're manic and then we're going to stylize it. And then they've destroyed their lives and we're going to stylize it. So I don't think there was anything interesting in terms of the story, because it kind of felt like we've seen that before play out on screen. So in order to compensate for that, it's like, you know, we're going to use a lot of music and we're going to use a lot of, you know, popular rock songs or classic rock songs. And then we're also going to use a lot of very disorienting or orchestral music and score type music to make it, you know, seem a little more interesting or disorienting. And what it did is it just kind of created a mess. It was really distracting. It felt, you know, again, jarring. I won't say jarring, but it felt like grating almost. Like it took you out of it. And it was over stylized to the point where it just seemed like that was a crutch for the lack of anything else interesting, where like you might get that in a book because the book has a longer runway, or you can fill in the gaps with your mind. They kind of have to fill in the gaps for you, and the way they do that through these things, and also like some of the subversive things we liked when we were talking about, like in the trailer, like in the movies, like the bank fucks America and the names of the shitty bank and all those things like that. Those kind of were thrown in there, which like are kind of funny, but in terms of trying to build an atmosphere, it just seemed like really, I don't know if it was pandering. It just seemed like really superficial. And again, like, you know, I'm a fan of the Russo brothers and what, you know, what they've done in the comic book movies and their prior output. And I think the takeaway from this movie for me is that, like, on the face value, the story definitely seems like worth telling, because it's, I think anytime you have like a work of literature that's done by somebody who's gone through the experience, it's, you know, it's something worth reading. But worth reading is not worth making a movie over, I think, in a lot of instances. And this is just what it felt like. We're like, okay, we got this book that seems really interesting. And then you're like, I want to make a movie out of it. And they're like, oh shit, like, how do you actually do that? Mm-hmm. And like, once you get it out on the screen, you know, the familiar beats of like what the story tries to sell or tell you are just not enough. And you kind of got to do other things that just didn't really work for me in this movie.
Yeah, I think that, something that maybe happened here was that they saw that this is like an obviously very well regarded book. It all takes place in Cleveland. So they thought like, this is a passion. This can be a passion project for us. Right. Like, cause they're obviously Cleveland guys and they wanted to be able to do all this and give it an authentic feel. But I don't know if either they just didn't have like the proper sort of don't know, maybe licensed to tell this story or what, but like they just didn't know how to tell this story in a way that felt real. Like if I didn't know that this was based off of like a semi-autobiographical book, I would assume that it was a screenplay made by like some guy who lived in like Hollywood Hills his entire life, right? Like I would assume this would be somebody that had no clue anything about this. And that kind of hurt this movie a lot. It's like you're saying, there's so much that just didn't feel real and just felt like stuff that we had seen before. And like I think what I was saying earlier, just I feel like I could telegraph from start to finish exactly what was going to happen in this movie, even right from like the opening 20 minutes, which is just you don't want that. You want it to be more unique and more just not even thrilling, but just keep your audience on their toes, right?
Yeah, I agree. And this is a really lazy comparison for obvious service level reasons, you know, regarding the fact that a large part of the plot involves the military and this other movie involves the military completely. But it reminded me of Jarhead, the 2005 Jake Gyllenhaal movie, where, you know, it was based off a book by Anthony, I think it was Anthony Swofford. And I feel like I read it and I mean, parts of it were, you know, the story was about like kind of like emptiness that comes from, you know, being involved in like a war that I don't know, you know, like from a recruiting, you're promised something and then you go there. And then obviously like war is filled with horrors. And maybe I didn't read the book cause I can't speak of it too much, but like when you got to the actual movie, like the Jarhead movie, it just didn't seem like it had anything. It wasn't an interesting movie besides the fact that it was like one of the first movies that tried to at least get somewhat political about like, you know, the war, but it almost didn't have enough to say from that regards. It didn't take.
And that was Desert Storm too, or that was Desert Shield rather too. That wasn't even like Iraq. And that movie,
yeah, it was the Gulf War.
I think what's great about your comparison too, was that the, there's a line from Jarhead. I remember where the drill instructor is like attacking Gyllenhaal. And he's like, what the fuck are you doing here? And he's like, sir, I got lost on the way to college, sir. And that is like almost beat for beat the moment like when Cherry is like kind of talking to the drill instructor, telling him like why he's joining up for the military. So I think that's actually a spot on comparison because it did feel like they were vibe jacking them a little bit.
Well, I mean, but part of it is like, you know, if you look at the source material, I think like, you know, stories of returning from combat, a changed person are stories worth listening to. I mean, they're personal experiences and like disillusionment and experiences from seeing horror firsthand. And, you know, too often, you know, we log on to Call of Duty and, you know, it's kind of, it's glamorized, right? And, you know, when you see these books coming out where people try to explain their experiences in a way to say like, you know, fundamentally this altered my DNA as a person because I saw things and I keep seeing those things and I'm not the same person after. Like, I think like in terms of books, it works really well, but like, it's been done well on the big screen before, but it's a really delicate line to balance. And especially with something like Jarhead, where the movie's almost completely about that, but I don't remember it being overly profound, you know, and I think some of the criticism at the time was about like just not being able to translate the subject matter material in as faithful of a way as possible. Cherry has an element of that, but it you know, that's almost, I mean, and that's why I say it's a lazy comparison. I mean, that's a plot beat to get you to, you know, the, to get you into like the after in terms of, you know, struggling with addiction into like the robbing the bank plot. And that's why I kind of said like, you know, the movie has like three major parts and it's, I don't know, like it's categorized into chapters. And I think I counted like five in an epilogue. I don't know if I remember correctly. But it's almost like the start of the movie where you like you're introduced to the characters can almost be done away with. And that's like part of the pacing is like you just there's almost like there's too much time dedicated to characters who don't really like it doesn't even give them any depth. There's no real depth to Tom Holland's character other than like, well, you know, very surface level things. And I think Tom Holland did a fine job, but part of it's just the story of the movie. It's not real interesting.
I think I'm definitely going to watch this again too, because my initial takeaway, I see a lot of critical analysis. And this includes like our audience too. Our audience a little less on that. Our audience kind of mostly focused on like just kind of the style and like you said, pacing and the way it was constructed. But for me, the story didn't, I wasn't bothered much by the story because I know some people calling it bland and like not all there, you know, like it doesn't really hit as much. The story was almost okay for me. I think told oddly in some parts. I think the beginning of the movie is a bizarre twist. But I think, again, the example there is, I think it's visually and stylistically, the way that they presented this movie is easily the most distracting thing. Mm-hmm. I think that's what takes away the – that's my biggest issue. I'm going to watch it again. Maybe I won't like the story as much now, but my takeaway, I had to sit and think about it for a bit. Like, maybe I didn't even dislike what they told – or how they told it, especially Holland's acting. I thought Tom Holland was fine. But I was like, God, like I was almost thrown off so much by what they were trying to do. It's like they almost got too much creative freedom to work with this. And like it was presented in this very large scale way for a story that maybe didn't need that scale. It was just such an odd mix of things that felt like almost more of like an indie, like personal project, right? Like some of the choices that they made, but it was also done on this big blockbuster scale because of who they are. And it just didn't work.
That's a good way of putting it, actually. It says, like, this is a very intimate story, but it is told with like that grand sort of feel to it. That's weird, right?
That's right. Again, maybe I'm, and I, when I'm confused on that, like, I like to watch it again a second before we talk about it. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to do that, but I kind of wish I, the more and more I talk about it, the more I wish I did. Cause I'm like, did I, maybe I was too distracted to really notice if it was like that poor, but maybe again, it may have just been just the way they put this out there. I'll read like a couple of our audience's thoughts as well. I think a couple people had some pretty decent comments. Thought they did a good job of showing. Some people agreed with like they thought the addiction angle was good. Some thought it was bad, but again, it all boils down to technical issues. Someone said thought this had too many technical issues. Everything before Iraq being 50-ish minutes when it should have been maybe 25. Way too much slow mo and making 30 minutes feel like an hour 20, to name a few. In terms of the movie, I don't think it's as bad as the critics have. I found it really picked up once basic training started, but some of the director choices, aspect ratio change, text on screen were questionable. Not as bad as critics made it out, but still not very good. Definitely got much better towards the end, but I think it misses the mark on being a movie about addiction, falls into the classic tropes of addicts are bad people. So some people didn't love the story. But again, that's kind of where they go through. It felt like four movies rushed through and smashed together almost too much to focus on. Really thought most of Tom Holland's acting was pretty solid, which is crazy because again, like it's still long, like it's a longer movie, but I think that's a solid analysis from it, from our audience.
And I mean, that's again, like that's the basic problem. I think sometimes when you read these books and you're like, you can read it and say like, holy shit, this is a good book. But just a book, you know, by virtue of being a much longer experience, can get you from point A to point B and has more of a luxury to do that.
Yeah.
So whereas like you could have four different books in one because they all build up to the end and, you know, you get to pace it via the book and it all makes sense like in a literary format. It doesn't mean just because you enjoyed that book that this would make a good movie. Like there's other factors that you got to take into consideration there. And I know this is like very obvious and I'm not like an expert on books or movies, but my general vibe of just watching this was like somebody really liked this book and it probably was a good book, but just because the book's good doesn't mean you should make a movie out of it. They're not the same thing. Just because it's a story doesn't mean that it translates from one medium to the other.
That reminds me, some guy had tweeted me a couple days ago and he's like, oh, when are they going to make Ghost of Tsushima into a movie? I'm like, no, dude, you watch the movie. The movie was the game. There's some things that just they exist in the media format they exist in because that's the way it exists best. They succeed on that because that is the correct medium to be consuming it. Like something like Game of Thrones, like you couldn't have condensed a Game of Thrones book really into a movie because there's just too much going on. There's too many moving parts. And like, I think this book rather in the way they try to transition it into a movie by breaking up into parts into like these different stylistically like little blocks, it never clicked. And instead of it like seamlessly transitioning between those different vibes, like it just was very clunky. It was like full stop, full start, you know what I mean? Like it just never really got a smooth transition between those, and it was very abrasive.
And it's, you know, the other thing is like, you know, it also depends on who's telling the story. You know, when you have the person who went through it directly telling their story and you're experiencing it, like there's more gravitas that comes with that. When it's filtered through the lens of somebody else and interpreting that story and telling it, like I think that's really where you get to the dangers of like falling for the familiar beats about like how addiction's portrayed on screen. And I don't know enough about what it's like to you know, comment on it, but a lot of the movies kind of fall into the same gap where like you have these people who are like, you know, and like you said before, it's like, you know, I think like historically movies have presented addicts as bad people, and that's not the case. Maybe I agree with that in some sense, because it kind of did the whole thing like, look how great things are going before, and they're you know, happy, and they're, you know, have a great chemistry together, and then he has this obviously like terrible life experience that gives him like PTSD, and then falls into addiction from it. But then it follows the same beats of like trying to make the addiction, you know, there are parts where like they try to like show their experiences while like high on the drug, and like stylize it with like music, or stylize it with like cinematography that makes you feel like you're kind of experiencing their highs from it. And then of course experiencing their lows from it. And a lot of that, like the way the addiction was portrayed on the screen, wasn't particularly new. And it kind of just felt like the same ways, you know, like him just like laying on the floor, like, you know, vomiting from withdrawal while being in the holding cell or whatever. Like, you know, while, you know, that does happen, it's just like, I feel like I've seen that before. And I don't know if that's like, it's a real delicate balance when you put that on screen. Like I said, I don't know enough about it to comment on like right, wrong, or indifferent, but it just feels like at that point, it's kind of the same old Hollywood like portrayal of it that we've seen before. Mm-hmm. And it's just stylized in a way to kind of, you know, disorient you, to make it feel like you're right there along with the you know, along with Tom Holland's character, but you're not, because you're you know, it's a movie and it's made by many different people. But when you read the book, they're describing their experiences, or at least a scene based on their experiences. And I think that lends itself to a little more plausibility when you're you know, seeing it through the lens of somebody who's gone through it, rather than the distorted lens of you know, a gigantic film production.
Yeah, I think that their examination of addiction was very face value. It wasn't very deep, and like you're saying, not entirely different. And I know that Nico Walker was offered a chance to be like a producer on the movie. I think he declined. I think if he was to be involved in this movie, it would have been significantly better, just because obviously he's the one who went through a lot of these experiences, semi-autobiographical or not. And just, I think his voice, or just maybe someone with more sort of perspective on the actual situation like that, would have made this a little bit better, because it did feel inauthentic, and it did feel very like, again, just face value, just the way that they portrayed addiction and everything just being, you know, once you're an addict, that's the only thing about your person and your only thing about your personality. And that's not the case. You know, people are way more complex than that. And I think that they maybe tried to do that with like their sort of exposition in the beginning, explaining, you know, Cherry's background and his relationship with Emily. But once it hit the addiction phase, it became, that's the only thing about that character. And I don't think that was maybe the correct way to do that with the right amount of nuance. But again, not for us to say, I guess, but I don't know. Just wasn't great. Still 53 out of 100 for me.
Yep. That's where we land. Audience gave it a 61. Audience have been a little higher on the movie, so I see that. But yeah, again, it was not a movie I turned off. I didn't like despise it. I just didn't think it was very good. So, I mean, give it a chance. It might be something that you potentially like. I don't know. Very much possibly could be the case. Again, audiences seem to do like it a little more than the critics do. I also want to mention, this is from our review the other day, something I didn't mention, which I was pissed I didn't mention. This was like a large whiff on our part. The director of Raya is Carlos Lopez Estrada, who also did Blindspotting. And that is a fucking awesome 1-2 punch, by the way, of mm-hmm. recent releases. If you haven't seen Blindspotting, we are like, Blindspotting fucking rules. And I was reminded of that because Chris Stuckman, his reviewer I watch on YouTube all the time, I watched his review after ours, and he brought that up. I was like, fuck, I totally forgot to mention that. So yeah, he's fucking killing it in animated and that. Yeah, Blindspotting
is wildly awesome. Different movies, but both incredibly good in their own ways.
Which is cool to see. So you can tell that someone's going to be throwing out just heaters left and right. I don't know what we're doing later in the week. We're doing what?
We're doing Cherry later in the week. Just like we've guaranteed it for every day, for every episode for the last month.
Part two of our examination.
I know on Sunday we're doing Zack Snyder's Justice League. For sure.
Yeah.
Middle of the week, though, maybe Boss Level on Hulu. Though, again, my thing is that we are going to have to start putting theater movies in here. We get screeners. Like, I mean, I've gone to the theaters. Like, Chaos Walking might be our pick for the middle week. Michael back-to-back Tom Holland. So I will put something out on Monday. I promise. Monday I will. I promise you on that. Let's do a draft. Free things. Things that are free. Things that are free. Trill, you're going to be up first, then Ken Jack, then myself, then the audience. Free things.
Okay. You want me to take it?
Yep.
Let me go. All right. I'm going to take the obvious first round pick is the free samples at Costco.
Fuck.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I've missed from going to Costco, and they probably don't do them now, but they'll come back. They'll be back. Free samples are always great, man. I always like that stuff. I don't know how much of it I can eat now because, you know, when they have like the mini corn dogs or whatever that they tend to do, they have some gluten in it. But I, you know, you always love going free samples, smelling the free samples, tasting the free samples, going back for more free samples. They don't give a fuck. You go back for more. The man or lady there is happy to give you more.
Mm-hmm. See, this is where it always gets like, I feel like, sketchy as far as the word free goes, because I think all of our examples are essentially going to have some sort of barrier to get in. Like, you need a Costco membership in order to get into Costco. And like, my pick up next is I'm going to go with free bread at a restaurant. And do I have to specify the restaurant?
Yes, you do. You absolutely do.
Well, yeah. Then I'm going to do Outback, because Outback bread is delicious. But you see, the barrier there is I need to then order something at Outback, because you can't just go there, take the free bread, and then leave. So there's definitely a barrier for some of these, but I feel like we're
that absolutely counts. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Counts. So I'm going to go with the free bread at Outback, and that delicious.
Because you can ask for endless free bread.
Exactly. So I'm going to go with that, and it is absolutely delicious. They have bread at Outback. That butter, I don't know what it is they do that butter. It's all whipped up. It is absolutely delicious. How I have to pick it.
Kangaroo is punching that shit in the back.
I've been told that people have never seen me as happy as when I get to go to Outback with someone for the first time, and I tee them up to say, "You like that bread?" Like, yeah, you like that, and then have them say pumpernickel, only so I can just dunk on them and tell them it's honey wheat bread. Yeah, pumpernickel.
Kangaroo punch is definitely a term in Urban Dictionary. I'm not going to look up. That has to be.
Not either.
1,000%.
All right, those are two great picks. Those were my top five, obviously.
Is there any funnier mental image than a kangaroo wearing boxing gloves?
It's amazing. I love that.
It's incredible.
But in your mental image, does it have boxing shorts on too?
I don't know. That makes it a little bit better, I think.
Yeah, red and blue boxing shorts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, so I don't love the place. I think it's very overrated, but I'm going to Texas Roadhouse bread. And that comes with their butter. Oh, that cinnamon butter. It is delicious.
You can see a reflection off of it.
Yes, you can. Yes, so good. You can. David Dobrik got the fruit punch fountain. Trill, you get the Texas Roadhouse bread for a mirror.
The mirror bread.
audience number one for them. They end up going with the bread from Olive Garden. Olive Garden breadsticks.
Their breadsticks. I don't like that pick at all.
Well, the breadsticks are better than the Outback bread. I'm just gonna say it.
That's incorrect. That is one of the craziest things you've ever said on this podcast.
Trill, I feel like you would. This is a rare one for me. This is fast food trivia and fast chain restaurant trivia, which I don't have in my head. Do you have to pay for the Parmesan sauce, the dipping sauce?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
I think you do, which that makes this one a little tougher.
I haven't been in Olive Garden in a while. And Fazoli's had free breadsticks too. I don't know if they'll be on the list. There's a person you go through and pass them out.
Audience number two, they picked water cups. I think that stinks.
No, that should be, you know, here, my general stance on this is water should be free. Just water. And it's not free. You pay for water. Water will be a commodity we'll continue to pay for, and it sucks. I don't think we should give anyone credit for providing water.
Yeah, I didn't like that pick at all either.
Yeah, maybe are these people who potentially kind of they cheat a little bit and they put the soda in there?
Well, if you take the free water cup and then you steal from the restaurant, I don't think it's free. You're paying with your moral and ethical values.
Mm. All right.
Mm. I mean, it's free on a surface level.
I could say something's free if I like rob from a bank because I didn't.
There needs to be an age limit on that though, because I feel like if you're 17 and you're doing that, you get like a, you know, it's like, oh, like dumbass kids. He's trying to save a couple bucks.
Some people did put things you steal. So
So if we're counting things you steal, that's a different scenario.
Which we're not. My number two. Pod. So my number two, I'm allowing, you can tell me if you're vetoing this, but I think it's free. Because I think it overflows. And that is the bag fries from Five Guys.
Yeah. No, the extra think, fries. Yep. Mm-hmm, definitely counts.
Does that count?
I think that counts.
I'm not gonna argue against it. You could argue against, I'm not going to.
Yeah, you could say that the large fry at Five Guys really is the whole bag, and the cup is there to make you think that the cup is the large fry.
You could also argue that since you're paying $10.79 for the fries, you're getting the correct amount of fries.
Yeah, that's true.
The dollar.
But the feeling, I think that free in this case is more of like a meta term, right? Because again, we were like, you have to pay for a Costco membership to go in and get those samples, right? You have to, like, I don't even remember what my picks were. Same thing. Like, there's a barrier. So it's a more loose definition of the word.
All right. Ken Jack, you're up.
I'm going to go with the free samples of Sarku at the food court mall, because that chicken teriyaki and that little tiny toothpick, it hits.
I'm going to let you corner the market and take the whole food court.
They know what they're doing with Sarku. Like they're bringing out the big guns.
That little fucking teriyaki just slathered with sauce on that toothpick. You just take a bite and you just feel the MSG flowing through your entire body. Mm. Like,
I will say though, the Popeyes food court free samples. If you have a Popeyes in a food court, that feels like actual stealing, because those tenders they give it like that just feels like
just a whole tender.
No, it's not, but it's a fairly large chunk at the Popeyes that I've seen in food courts.
You want a chicken chunk, sir? Least advertising terminology you could have. You want a chunk, sir?
Okay. You have two good. We got a lot of good picks so far. Trill, you had Costco free samples round one. Now you've back-to-back picks.
Okay, so healthcare is not free. Falling to Ken Jack's statement, healthcare is very expensive. But sometimes if you get the right primary care physician, and you have a very specific instance that requires a cream or a pill or something you will not be taking on a regular basis, they'll say, I have samples. They'll say the pharma rep came in, and they'll come back out with a bag of the prescriptions, and you do not have to go to the pharmacy or pay for said prescriptions because the pharma rep had the samples.
I don't think that's happened to me, but I would love that scenario.
Yeah, so, that does sound solid.
I had one doctor who did pretty much just gave me free samples of drugs all the time, which it was like for prescription stuff I needed. It wasn't like he was giving me a bag and I was getting like a rheumatoid arthritis drug, whatever. But it was for like, if I needed like a Z pack, he had Z packs. You just stocked them up and said, I've got samples of these and you don't have to go to the pharmacy or pay for it. It was fantastic. Morally, ethically, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to call the doctor out. But it was nice. It was nice to just, it wasn't so much a free drug, not paying for it. That's part of it. It was not having to go to the pharmacy.
Mm,
the convenience of not having to do the whole song and dance at the pharmacy.
Oh, I made it at the buzzer yesterday, like 4:30 on the dot. Barely got there in time.
You know that shit's generic now, man. You just order online. Get what you need.
Throw your back-to-back picks.
Oh, okay. I'm going to take Free Willy. I think
I had a feeling I was going to make it somewhere.
Willie really, orcas were big in the early 90s. Killer whales were huge. They were having a moment. Yeah. like every kid loved orcas, SeaWorld. This is before like people really had the, in-depth personal evaluation of whether or not it's okay to keep these highly intelligent large mammals in a bathtub. It's not. But orcas were having a moment, and nothing encapsulated the orca moment like a movie based around freeing Willie, the orca.
Does this come with the Michael Jackson song too?
Comes with the Michael Jackson. Yeah, hold me, stand on there softly, and I will be with you. The bridge on that song is great. It's like,
it just that's the screen cap we should put out, just a picture of an orca saying, that's it, I'm gonna become the Free Willy.
That's it.
I mean, you had the shot of the orca jumping over the kids over the rocks.
Great fucking movie poster, that the doing the big U right over the kid.
Yep,
the first take didn't go so well, they had to refilm the movie with a new kid.
You look, you're wearing too much gray. I thought it was a seal. Fucking ate him alive. So I'm up, right?
Ken Jack, you're up.
I'm just going to go with free Slurpee. And it might be a generic pick, but especially in high school and early college, free Slurpee day would always sneak up on us. Like some kid would come into school and be like, yo, today's free Slurpee day. And it would be like, or maybe it wasn't even during school. It was over the summer or something. Cause I remember it'd be warm out, whatever the day is. But like, somebody would tell you, oh yeah, did you know it's free Slurpee day? And you wouldn't know. And then you'd go and get a free Slurpee out of it. And that is a true free thing on this free list. Like, you do not have to pay shit. You just get a free Slurpee. And I just like Slurpee. So got to put it on the list.
Yeah. So I wouldn't put it on. I think the wait is too long for the size of the Slurpee.
I never had too much of a wait, but maybe that's because I would always find out late. Cause like, I would never remember the day of Slurpee. I would be like 4:30. I'd be like, oh fuck, it's free.
Isn't it just 7-Eleven? Isn't it just July 11th?
That would make sense, yeah. I was gonna
say. Maybe I could be wrong. I thought it was 7-Eleven every year.
I remember it's during the summer for sure, like earliest summer, so that makes sense.
So, I mean, Slurpees are delicious, though I'm team icy. I prefer the consistency of the ice.
You like the little beads, the little ice pellets? Just
What icy are you having? Those are Dippin' Dots.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about here, Chance. Free beads in your icy? What are you talking about?
Oh, did the icy? I mean, the Slurpee is more of a fine ice.
Sir,
really? What am I thinking of?
Go get yourself an icy.
I thought the icy had
that.
I thought the icy had the chunkier like ice chunks in it.
No.
Like it was still. It wasn't like, you know. It's not like you're consuming gravel, but I thought it was more pellet based.
No, icies are they're almost the same exact consistency. So I'm really just splitting hairs, but no.
Oh, okay. It's been a while since I've had an icy. I'm sorry. I don't know what I'm thinking of then. I retract my
Me
statement.
Not knowing if you have
you
to pay
served
for
like
this.
A fucking. You got served an icy with paint chips in it.
They just served you ice. They just gave you a cup of ice.
A cup of ice and just squirted like three pumps of like fruit punch Italian soda stuff on top of it.
You me not knowing the cheese and you not knowing icy. That's you and me off our game. Food pod may not be happening now.
What's the flavoring they use in almost every place for like it's like the Italian brand or whatever.
Or
what?
Starts
with a T. It's like if you get, you know, if you go to like Starbucks, the flavor, you know, but they have like a gamut. They have like millions of flavors.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
You can see places. They're just the standing pump things. They look like big shampoo bottles. They cornered whatever brand that is. They cornered the market on flavor pumps.
Fuck, I don't remember what it's called. We actually have one here, like probably like 20 feet away from me. I just don't remember what the name of it is. Oh, whatever.
I can imagine the packaging in my mind. That would be a good dozen question, Jeff. It's Tarani.
Oh, okay. All right. Stuff is good.
Slurpee Day is a good pick. I'm going just chips and salsa and dips at the table. I know you have to pay for it someplace, but Mexican restaurants, typically free. I'm thinking the great chain across the country, Chewy's. You get the free chips, free salsa, free creamy jalapeno. Just a good thing of chips and salsa at a Mexican restaurant is always a meal ruiner. No way around it. Will always spoil your meal. Had to take that from the audience, too. That was their next pick. The next pick off the list, though, for the audience is porn trials.
I can safely say I've never done that.
I feel like I got all of my... I feel like I got all I need out of the box on that one.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like what's available to me now on a very basic level is adequate.
And then dinner check mint. So the mint that comes with a dinner check.
Depends on the mint. Depends.
I can't remember.
There's a restaurant in Austin called the Roaring Fork. If you're in Austin, it's in between the Arboretum and the Domain. So if you ever visit Austin, cool restaurant right on the water. They have these like longer stick mints that are covered in dark chocolate, and they are fucking outstanding. That's very specific niche.
The Arboretum also houses the greatest Barnes & Noble known to man.
It does, Found out in December, they're building a gigantic Lamborghini store right across the street from it.
Really?
You know what we should count for them under the dinner mints thing is, do you ever go to like a Chinese buffet or something and they give you the white rabbit candy at the end of it?
Yes.
Oh, that stuff is so good. It's just like milk candy, but it is delicious. I want to give them that as a consolation. Is under
You ever get like the gum from like some of the like different Asian restaurants as well?
Mm-hmm.
Hibachi places do the gum a lot.
A lot of Japanese restaurants do that. Yeah, that stuff's really good. Like little grape gummies, they're so good.
I miss the 90s Vintages bookstores, man. The greatest bookstore ever created was the Borders that was outside of the Woodfield Mall in Schaumburg, Illinois. You know, I'm just talking like full-size bistro cafe or whatever, not bistro, a cafe in there. Upstairs with the CDs, the wood racks of all the CDs and the listening stations, just gigantic artifacts of a time long gone. And that Barnes and Noble, when I was in Austin, I popped in it to get a book for traveling, and the 90s are still alive in that one. Let me just
it's connected to a GameStop too. You can walk it through. It's not even like a door. It just opens up into a GameStop.
I would treat it as like essentially like a foyer of good smells before going to the GameStop.
And guess what's connected to it? A fucking Cheesecake Factory.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Anyway, my number four, I'm going beaches.
Wait, just like the act of going to a beach?
Yeah, beaches are free. I mean, I know there's private beaches. You got to be a member. Like, I'll tell you, my family lived in Southern California for a while. Lot of outstanding free beaches in Southern California. Table Rock Beach by Laguna Beach is maybe my favorite beach. Very small, intimate beach. Awesome.
You don't have to pay for parking?
All free.
One of the greatest, this is just me being earnest real quick, is like one of the greatest living scenarios you can get in your life. And it's expensive because typically living in these areas costs a lot of money to do it. But there are places in the country where you have access to like really nice parks or really good recreational areas or just, you know, forest and hiking and camping. Like one of the greatest things is to have one of those like at your disposal for weekend activities. That includes beaches. So I agree with that. It's just, it's a luxury that's not available to everyone, unfortunately, but it's nice when you live in those areas to have them around.
I'm happy my family moved out of California because I like them living in Austin. However, the beaches were cool. People are breaking the fucking embargo for Justice League right now over our timeline.
They're allowed to. They each got the email.
We did?
Yeah, we just got the email saying social embargo is done.
Oh, fuck.
Okay. All right, what do you guys think? I'm just kidding.
I mean, you can say it right now. I mean,
we're allowed to.
All right, say it.
Okay. Okay. We're not allowed to do a review of Justice League yet, technically, but we can talk about it. Justice League, it's very long. It is long. It is definitely better than the original Justice League, the Snyder Cut, that is. It is a way better backstory for Cyborg, which I feel like we didn't get any of whatsoever in Justice League, which is sick. There's a part with that where it actually made me tear up a little bit. Get a better backstory for Superman. All the bad stuff looks a little better. Some of the videos, the special effects they did looks like fucking like a 2010 video game, though. The touch-ups look really bad. That said, better than the original.
Much better than the original.
Significantly, yes. You could see the shitting on Josh Whedon or Josh Whedon. I will never stop calling him that. Will never end, I think. And this is a great example as to why.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's, I agree. It's long as fuck. I mean, it's four and a half hours. So one, there's something in it that is so fucking stupid though, but it doesn't ruin the movie. I don't know. It's hard to explain it and I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's something that is so dumb. But you're just like, whatever, that's not part. You're like, I just don't even count that as part of, like, yeah. I won't say what it is yet. Much more on Sunday. Okay, yeah, I didn't see that email. I was like, what are people doing? It's like we were being lapped, being passed over. Anyway. Here we go. Next pick. Ken Jack.
You know what? Maybe I'll skip this one. I'll skip this one and go to free clothes and shit they give you at Spring Fest or whatever your college day is.
Like free college T-shirts, yeah.
Yeah, they give you like a shit ton of free, like, and with my school, Spring Fest, like, I know they have like Rutgers Day. They have like different colleges do their different things. But like the day that they give you a bunch of free shit and they're like, hey, come spin the wheel. No matter what you land on, you're going to get like a free like $20 or $2 like laptop bag, like something like that. You're going to get some free shit and it all is going to be branded with your college, which when you're 19 is the coolest thing you've ever seen in your entire life. So I'm going to go with that day or with that whatever event at your college.
They had, yeah, like when they'd had the big recruitment days in undergrad, and like when you're a junior and senior and you go around and like talk to the recruiters, like, and try to get an interview for a job, some of the companies would come and like some of the companies just had like free pens, right? Like ArcelorMittal's there, I want to hire you, and they're giving you a free pen. Some of the companies would have like bags and stuff. They'd have like games you could play. This was way back in the day, probably before, you know, when they're just handing jobs out to everyone. That's how old I am.
Trill, last two picks.
Okay. I'm going to go with Ski Free for two reasons. The free's in the name. And the other reason is because the game was free. If you bought like a Windows 95, 98 computer, the game was in there. And it by far,
awesome fucking game.
Out of all the games to play, if you were a kid, that was the most fun because it was like legitimately a game where you controlled someone, tried to avoid the Yeti or whatever. Your other options were Solitaire and then Minesweeper. And I'd like to go back and play some Minesweeper, but I could never figure out Minesweeper when I was a kid. I was just like, what do you mean? What all? I'm just going to randomly click places to see if I can win. And then my last pick is walking around the Vegas Strip. Vegas, very well known for not being free. Pretty much every experience you have in Vegas has to be bought and paid for. Some of it worth it, some of it not. Some of it too expensive, some of it relatively affordable. But walking around the Vegas Strip, you know, is free. And it's some of the best walking available, just in terms of taking in the sights, taking in all the brands and the restaurants and the changes and the games and everything like that. I just enjoy that. It might not be for everyone, but I like a good, like, you know, if you're there in Vegas and like you're with a group of guys or girls or whatever, I like waking up like hungover at 7 a.m. going down, getting a coffee and just walking around the Vegas Strip and trying to get it out of my system. And everything's open at 7 a.m. too. It's amazing. Like the best part about Vegas is like when you realize like you're walking through like indoor malls and it's like 11:30 p.m. and then like the Christian Louboutin stores open. And I don't know why, like, you know, you never want to buy anything from that store, but it's weird that a store like that would be open at like 11:30 p.m.
I wouldn't have thought of that, but I like it.
I like the my favorite spot in Vegas is the mall behind the Palazzo and the Venetian or whatever. It's like in it. And they got like that cool like little Italian coffee brand place there. I forget what it's called. It's like the coffee they only serve at like ice cream shops, like gelato places. And it's like the most eclectic collection of retail known to man. And I never buy anything from there, but it's just it's fun to take all that in.
Okay, my last pick, I'm going to go with. I was considering Twitter because everyone always asks how is Twitter free, but I'm going to go with, let's say, when you order something online that is slightly defective, only slightly defective, and instead of making you send it back, they let you keep that and the original and a new version of whatever it is you bought. So this is a very long-winded thing. Sorry to Robbie for this graphic, but that's my pick. Because you guys know what I'm talking about. This has happened to you, I'm assuming, before, where they let you keep two versions of whatever it is you bought.
Yeah, that's happened to me before.
I love it. And it includes, like, with food, too. Like, if
food,
they give you,
food
like,
is a good example, yeah.
Yeah.
If it's so fucked up that, like if you have a pizza, the whole thing is smushed, but you're like, I can salvage a piece out of that if I get it.
Exactly.
The manager comes out and apologizes, and you're like, I'm like, things happen. I completely get it. But if you're comping me, I'm not going to turn it down.
Exactly.
The older you get, the less free stuff you get, by the way.
That's well, you know what? You fucking teed up my last pick, Halloween candy.
Yeah.
Halloween candy is free and awesome.
And that's pure free too.
Yeah. Especially because pure like free. You really don't need to do anything. Like you could just put on a t-shirt and be like, I'm Jim. I'm Bookface Jim from The Office.
What do you
three
call
hole
it?
Punch Jim.
Ted from How I Met Your Mother did. I'm a hanging Chad. Fuck just, you.
I'm Ted Mosby. That's yeah. Audience's last pick, your ex's streaming account password.
Oh, I like that.
I like that a lot. That's
a good pick. That's a good job, audience. You redeemed yourself big time.
Yeah, things left on the board. These are good lists. I think the audience list is the worst one, but these are good lists. Salad from Olive Garden. I just couldn't pick a salad.
Oh, I love the cold tongs, man.
Bank
can't get over those cold tongs.
They're icy coldest. Cold.
They need to advertise that. They'd be like, we have the coldest tongs in the game.
Bank lollipops, free when tire air is free. Checked baggage when it's free. Libraries. Maybe if you stay for a second movie, that's also kind of stealing.
I put free Ritas on here because they give you free Ritas on the first day of spring.
Yes.
March 20th in this case. I flew Swiss Air once and they gave you this free chocolate that is incredibly good. And I know that's like a deranged flex, but not all their food. I don't like all airport food or airline food.
JetBlue's got the best free stuff. JetBlue kills it. Free Wi-Fi, like their stuff is the best. Mm-hmm. Toothpicks, Cracker Barrels, Checkers, and rocking chairs. I know that's not really free if you're paying to eat there, but I had to mention Cracker Barrel.
They're not going to yell at you if you take the tea game.
No, they're not going. They have so many of those in the back.
I need to.
How it goes.
The tea game is one of those things that you could probably watch a YouTube video and figure out how to beat it 100% every time if you just watch that one YouTube video. But you don't want to do that because you take all the fun out of the tea game. It's such a still limited experience.
Free shit. Very cool. Free shit is very cool.
Jeff, that's something you should do. Like, you should have a competitive series, Cracker Barrel Tea Game Championship.
Oh, like a league?
Hell yeah.
No, it's just like one time thing. You couldn't do a league out of it because, like I'm saying, it has to be spur of the moment because someone else would go and figure out what to do. You have to just you have to gather people in a room and say, this is what we're doing. We're doing the goddamn tea game.
All right, that's it for this podcast episode. I'm only rushing because I absolutely have to pee and I may piss myself. I've never pissed myself in 341 episodes. I don't want to do it now. That's it. For Ken, Jack, and Trill, I'm Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you later on in the... We're doing chaos walking. We'll talk to you later on in the week.
Happy to be good about it.
I got you, moonlight. You're my starlight. I need you all night. Come on, dance with me. I'm levitating. You, moonlight. You're my starlight. I need you all night. Come on, dance with me. I'm levitating. I see it's written in the stars. We can go wherever, so let's do it now or never, baby. Nothing's ever, ever too far. Glitter in the sky, glitter in our eyes, shining just the way we are. I feel like we're forever every time we get together, but whatever, let's get lost on Mars. All night. Come on, dance with me. I'm levitating. You can fly away.